From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the ninth day of March 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Beck. She's at Total Farm Marketing out of Hollister, Missouri. And a bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will be here for an extended look at the growing regions in both the northern and southern hemispheres. We'll discuss the wheat crop across the planet in depth, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Jackie Vex from Total Farm Marketing now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago at the CME Group. Thanks, Jackie, for being with us today and for being at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana yesterday.
Yeah, it was a great day, Todd. I think it was one of the best meetings we've ever had. The combo of our panels along with the FarmDoc team just seemed to hit all the notes that needed to be talked about. So I thought it was just a great experience.
They meshed very, very well. I was really happy. Thanks to everybody who came out for that meeting as well. Let's turn our attention, though, to what happened at the CME Group. Again, wheat has been leading the marketplace. It all has to do with the war in Ukraine.
Oh, my lordy, lordy, lordy. Well, you know, the question in my mind today is, yesterday we saw it go down $1.30. We had expanded limits to $1.30 for the first time. And today we were down 85 because we didn't hold limit down at the end yesterday, 85 both in Chicago and in KC. And I'm wondering out loud, okay, will expanded limits tomorrow cure the down move and have us see a move back to the higher side? You know, that remains to be seen. And we know that as this war is going on, our world wheat suppliers are just short. They're short of supply, and there's not a lot of opportunity to buy physical product. And I think that's one of the things that's driving what's going on in this marketplace. And you look at the board action, May, Chicago wheat, March 1st was 932 and a quarter. March 8th was 1363 and a half. Yesterday we had a $1.99 and a half trading range in May. Today we had an 83 and a half cent trading range. So, you know, it's a wild and crazy place, but this is the way it is when you have food concerns, and that's certainly what we're looking at.
What do you see in the regular things that you watch, and then we'll come back to some of the other things that you've been thinking about?
Okay. Well, so on support and resistance on corn, May 636-843, July 724-846, and December 632-674. Beans 1628-1759, July 1616-1741, and November 1387-1555. Gold for April 1892-2112. Dow Jones we see at 31.5.32 for support, 36.953 is resistance. The dollar, 97.35 and 99.50. Bitcoin for March, 34,300, 46,231. And as we move into managed money, you know, last week we talked about how managed money switched from being short to long. Well, this week they've remained long, but they cut their long position from 34 down to 31. In corn, cut their position from 428, which was just short of 2,000 contracts below the record that was put in 2010, to 391. On beans, they increased their long to 218 from 195. Soy meal increased their long 92 to 105. And soy oil reduced their longs from 102 to 95.
When you think about the marketplace as it relates to farmers and what they need to do, and we look at settlement prices for the day, like the May beans at 18 cents lower, $16.71 and three quarters, the November at 14.73 and three quarters, or half a cent higher, kind of a unique spread there. The May corn was down 20 at $7.33, December down to 7 at 6.36 and three quarters. Does it tell you that there's support under this for a higher plateau, relatively speaking, at least in the short term?
I think you've hit it right on the head. In fact, something that I watch very closely are the 5-day and the 9-day exponential moving averages, which I talked about yesterday, you know, they're more heavily weighted with near-term trade than just an ordinary average is. And when you look at beans, May beans, we held above that five-day moving average. On May corn, we were above it, and just toward the end of the day or midday, we fell below it, but we're still above the nine-day. Those are very important areas to be in. And if the five-day crosses below the nine-day, then I'm concerned, but I haven't seen that happen. And so I think that there's a reason for us to believe that we could see this market come back and actually, you know, put in new highs. Now, as bad as it's been in May wheat, okay, we still held the five-day exponential average, moving average. And that exponential moving average, again, is extremely important. And so I think that from a technical standpoint, it says to me that there is still strength here. Now, we had the USDA report out today, Todd, and basically they kind of dissed it. You know, they really didn't. You didn't see it make a huge difference in the market. Beans, it affected beans a bit because beans were positive and then they went negative. But corn was already negative before the report. Wheat was negative before the report. So it really didn't do much. Let's just put it that way. And so I think in general, this is potentially a correction in the marketplace and perhaps putting away some profits. You know, when we looked at the, if you watched the wheat market yesterday, when we went down to that $1.30, when we came off the $1.30, Todd, there were times that we were jumping 10 cents at a time. And, you know, that's shocking to see because we're just not used to seeing that in the grain markets. But I think that that is a reflection of a large block coming into the marketplace and then being filled on its way up or on its way down, one or the other. And that's why you get big jumps because everything's computerized and it's rapid. You know, we get the information very quickly. And so I do think that we've got opportunity here yet. I wouldn't be running in and terrified at this point.
Anything else before I let you go?
Well, I should hit on the USDA report. You know, basically it came in at 1.44 billion bushel carryout compared to 1.54 last month. That's 100 million less. We came in at 40 million less on beans and 5 million more on wheat. And, you know, if you look at the reaction on the on the screen, it certainly didn't say much. I think the part that is the most interesting is that we actually saw the average corn price go up to 565 from 545, beans went from 13 to 13 and a quarter, wheat went from 730 to 750. So that would say to me that the market is still weighted heavily, you know, going the other direction. And so the only thing I can say about South America basically is that fertilizer supply disruptions are a big thing. Brazil's probably at the greatest risk. I didn't realize this. Brazil is the largest consumer of fertilizer at 8% of all the global usage. Can you imagine that? And 85% is imported. So those are some really tough situations that they're in. Russia accounts for 25% of Brazil's total fertilizer imports and 21% of its nitrogen imports. So it's really strange. I know that Wayne mentioned this yesterday, that there's currently a bill pending in the Brazilian Congress that would allow them to do mineral extraction on indigenous lands, you know, in other words, on the naturalized people that are there on their land. I don't know if they're going to stand for that, but it's going to be pretty interesting.
Indeed it will. Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. Jackie Vakes is with Total Farm Marketing. She is in Hollister, Missouri. Find the Closing Market Report and our Commodity Week podcast online at willag.org. Earlier today, the AgTech Innovation Summit took place in the Colonnades Club of Memorial Stadium. That's a football stadium here on campus. And James Scher, who's the Director of Sales and Marketing for ADM Milling, that's Archer Daniels Midland, spoke to those gathered about carbon markets and being carbon neutral and how the mills that ADM operates are working to have a carbon neutral footprint. And I also asked him about carbon sequestration and farms.
Well, the main point is that, you know, ADM is working hard to assure that the crops that we produce and the products that we produce have a reduced carbon footprint over time, and that we're working aggressively to help our industry reduce the carbon footprint of the crops and the products that are produced from those crops.
How have you done that in the mills in the United States, and how many of them are there?
We have 22 mills, flour mills in the United States, and we've worked to achieve carbon neutral status in those mills through a number of initiatives, including energy reduction in our mills themselves, applying renewable energy certificates, as well as capturing and sequestering the carbon, an equivalent amount of carbon, through a Decatur sequestration project that ADM leads.
That's not low-hanging fruit exactly, but it's only part of the supply chain, which begins on the farm. That's a much more difficult issue, I think, as it relates to carbon sequestration and neutrality.
It is a much more difficult on farm. There's some practices that we know lead to carbon sequestration in the soil of some of the carbon output from those farms. The science of this is still in the works. There's lots of things being tested. There's lots of various ideas out there, and they're being verified and worked on today. So it's an evolving field, and that's one of the challenges as to what's truly the long-term impact and how can we best capture that, and understanding what it's going to look like in 10, 15, and 20 years. So it is more complicated on the farm level, and is something that we're working aggressively with a number of different partners to achieve.
There are several issues that must be addressed through that process. One of them is the supply chain movement itself and how you use a commodity or take a commodity from agriculture and maybe potentially identity preserve that. I'm not sure that that's possible on as grand a scale as we're discussing or trying to do something else.
It's not as much identity preservation as really segregation of the crop. And in general, in our industry, most products are treated at a mass balance level. For a number of reasons, it's the way to go. The ultimate idea, though, is that the amount of crops that we're producing in regenerative practices and carbon-reduced practices is a set number. And whether that product itself is traced through and segregated out through the supply chain is less important than the overall impact reduction that we're doing on the field.
The other end of this, and we've talked about it a little bit, is that consumers really want it, but it's not clear who wants to pay for it at this point.
Correct. I think that there's a challenge to the consumer and to the CPG companies as to how to understand what that added value is and what's important to consumers and what they're willing to share in the cost for. And I think that that's another ongoing test. I mean, you can look at the history of the organic food industry where, you know, those premium prices really reduce the number of consumers that have access to organic products just because of the price point. So we've got a similar issue going on with this reduced environmental footprint food supply chain. How do we share that cost throughout the system? How do our customers, you know, the industry, achieve their goals and help the consumer understand the value that plays?
Is there a certification process you think that would help? I mean, that's what happened with the organic side, but I'm wondering whether there's some logo, some certification process, something that might be useful, whether that's something that your customers might be interested in.
Right. There's a lot of talk about that right now. There's a lot of potential pitfalls and risks in doing something like that. ADM itself is not really active in that part of the business stream. So at this point, we don't really have a stand on that. That's really for the CPG companies and the consumers to work through and determine. At this point, it's fraught with a lot of risk. And so, you know, we aren't really that involved in that part of it.
That was James Scherer, Director of Sales for Milling at Archer Daniels Midland, ADM. I spoke with him at the Ag Tech Innovation Summit taking place here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois today. On this Wednesday, let's check in with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us. It's a sunshiny day here.
Yeah, we've got a little haze here, but yeah, it's not too bad. But we're on the fringe of the cold, so things are going to deteriorate from this point forward.
Haze, a little cold. Does that mean there's a clash of air masses at some point that maybe brought some moisture to the hard red winter wheat growing regions?
Yeah, indeed. You know, the radar is starting to lighten up a little bit, and we're going to encounter a new snowstorm out there in the heart of the Central Plains. It's going to be a nice event. There's going to be a lot of farmers who will be very happy with this system. It's not by any means going to be a drought buster, but there will be some significant snowfall in some key wheat producing areas in Kansas and southern Nebraska, and maybe a few areas in northeastern Colorado. And eventually we'll get some rain and snow changing into parts of Oklahoma. For Kansas, we'll probably see maybe a tenth to 6/10 of an inch of moisture. We'll probably see upwards to 6 or 7 inches of snow. That sounds okay. It's not gonna change anything big time down the road. But we're in that period of time where we're changing seasons, you know, and we were very warm. We were in the 80s in some of these places in Kansas last weekend, and we're going to be down to about -4 in some spots after the snowstorm passes, probably on Friday and Saturday mornings. So it's not good for the wheat crop, to go from one extreme to the other. But the good news is that there will be snow on the ground, so there won't be any winter kill from this. But we're going to turn those temperatures right back around again and go back into a warmer than normal mode next week. So we're going to continue to perpetuate some heaving of soil out that way. And we'll continue to work our way towards spring. Now, this constant significant change in temperature is something that occurs quite often in the spring, obviously. But it also offers the opportunity for rain and snow events to come and go a little more often. And the system that we have going through the region here over these next 2 days will obviously produce some welcome moisture. We will see some other systems like this over the next, we'll say, maybe 3 to 5 weeks. Not every week, but my point is there's going to be some whittling away at some of the dryness. And the attitude is going to be in the marketplace in particular, there's going to be relief there. And I want to kind of just wave a little caution flag that get us into the second half of April, and it's going to turn the other way. And we're going to go back into a warm and dry mode. And whatever improving tendency there's been in this early crop development, I think is going to go south very quickly. And so I just kind of want everyone to be aware that we do expect a little bit of precipitation these next few weeks. And it'll look like we're coming out of this, but it won't take long for the ridginess to start showing up in April, at latter part of April and into May. And it will get hot and dry. And we will see this not only in the hard red winter wheat areas, but I'm afraid we'll see that also encroach on the Western Corn Belt a little later in the spring, probably more likely in May rather than April.
Something to keep an eye on. Anything new of note in South America and the growing regions there?
Really, there's not a lot except for the fact that we're still moving away from droughty conditions. Argentina's soil moisture profile yesterday, pretty impressive. Most of the topsoil now is adequate to surplus. We still have some short subsoil moisture around in some of the production area. But the next 10 days will generate a good mix of weather. I think the only place where there's a potential for a problem in Argentina is in the far south in Buenos Aires and La Pampa, maybe some neighboring areas there in southern Cordoba and southern San Luis. Those areas will probably not see a lot of precipitation over the next 10 days, but they have the best subsoil moisture in the whole nation right now. And so those crops will cruise right through at least the first week of that period without any issue at all. And, you know, it is March, and getting really hot at this time of the year is pretty hard to do, especially in the southern part of that country. So I think they'll be able to conserve that moisture and get through this drier period without any kind of an issue. And on the Brazil side of the fence, it looks to me like there's going to be enough rain occurring on a regular basis to support those safrinha crops really well. And that's kind of been our expectation. I like what I see evolving. There is a little bit too much moisture, maybe in parts of Mato Grosso. But, you know, the key to successful safrinha corn in Mato Grosso, corn production, that is for the ground to be saturated when the monsoon ends. Well, the monsoon should end in April, and if we can keep the ground saturated, that will allow the moisture in the soil, the subsoil, to carry on normal crop development through the reproductive process. And so, you know, even though there's a lot of frustration over the wet bias, if they can keep it for a few more weeks, I think they're going to be sitting pretty with a good crop this summer.
Let's check in on the rest of the Northern Hemisphere wheat growing regions from Western Europe all the way over to China.
Yeah, probably the most important thing in Europe and North Africa is the fact that we're getting rain in some of the durum wheat production areas. You know, Spain, as well as Morocco and Algeria and Tunisia are all pretty big durum wheat producers, and it's been very dry winter for a lot of those areas. We started getting a little rain here earlier this month, and next week we're going to see some solid soakings that will be beneficial. So we're going to turn around that outlook there. It's going to get much better. Morocco, the southwest part of Morocco has been dry for multiple years, and so their water supply is almost nil. So they did not plant about half of the crop there. So that production is not going to come back. But the rest of the production in North Africa will do a lot better. In Russia, we are looking at a bitter cold air mass, similar to what we've got coming into the U.S. here this week. But there's snow on the ground in all of that wheat country. So I see no risk of any kind of winter kill situation in that area. And they've got a lot of moisture in the ground that will support them as we come into spring. Eastern Europe is drying down right now, but don't let that get anybody stirred up, because I think the spring is going to be fairly wet in Central and Southern Europe. So I expect to go the other direction at some point, maybe in another few weeks. And then way over into China, you know, the big news out of China this week was a report from the country stating that their winter wheat crop was the worst ever. And, you know, there's a little bit of truth that they had some problems last fall. In August through October of last year, it was raining much too much in their key winter wheat production area, and the crop did not establish as well as it should have. In fact, it was probably not even planted on time. It was probably late. And when I went back and looked at the data a little bit more up close, it looks like their window for planting and for establishment was from October 10th to November 30th. There was about a six-week period there in which they had to get the crop in and get it established. At the same time, because of all the moisture they had received previously, I'm sure there was areas of standing water around. So there may be some validity in the comment that came out of China this week that their crop is not in very good shape. But it's hard to tell, you know, what that really means. You know, is it a pocket here or a pocket there that didn't get planted or isn't up, you know, and established, or is it more broad-based or widespread? So we just don't know that. But there is some validity that they had some issues during their planting season. We'll just have to see. Their winter's been great. There's been absolutely no winter kill. And they're warming up right now and starting to green up the southern part of the crop.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Have a good day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.